Well, I rang Simon up and I said, look, Michael Hayes has rung me up and he's invited me to play in the Southern Knockout. His first words were, who's pulled out? they were his first words. Who's pulled out? I said, oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, cheers.
Oh, he wouldn't do it. Oh, he wouldn't do it. What a shot. Over the double, what a pot. Matt McInnes is your new 2019 Clubs New Zealand singles champion.
Hi, I'm Alex Stones and welcome to episode 37 of Inside New Zealand Pool. So it's been a while since our last episode, what with Christmas holidays and general family commitments getting in the way, but we're glad to be back and we're joined by a very talented player who's extremely accomplished on the 7 foot table, the 9 foot table, as well as the snooker table. He's most recently been selected to partake in the Great Southern Knockout 2, taking place in April. So a big welcome to the podcast, Neil Wally. Neil, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, mate. No worries at all, and it's good to be on here. Thanks.
Fantastic. And so I guess before we hear a little bit more about yourself and your background, I believe you took part in the Bowies Graded Classic in Dunedin over the weekend. So slightly unusual format with the better players being handicapped by a frame score or frame count. So how did you get on, and what were your thoughts on the graded format, Neil?
I thought I got an okay, Alex, to be honest. I managed to just get through my section play. But just to tell you a little bit about it, it was all thought up by, as far as I can gather, like three people, Glenn Spears, Ali Carpo, Tammy Evans, and they put it all together to be held at Bowies. And it was said from the outset it was going to be a charter club tournament. It was going to be quite brutal with the handicapping system, and it went absolutely perfect. The end result was Tane Tau took out Bryce Johnson, who's another Otago player, in the final. And it was well run. There was some great pool. There were some great plays down there. There were some really close games. We had John Saundercott there. We had Tony McMullion, Johnny Mattingly, and all the Otago boys and girls, a couple of juniors in there, and it was a very, very successful tournament. Yeah,
excellent. I'm not entirely sure where I stand on handicapping by frames, because every tournament in New Zealand, it's already got a plate tournament, which is essentially a B-grade tournament, so the lesser players don't need to worry about playing the likes of, you know, yourself or Simon Singleton in the main event. So why do we need to handicap players by frames as well? Surely you can't have it both ways, have a handicapping of frames and have a plate tournament.
To be fair, I think this was set. This was done from the outset. It was designed to be, I don't know, for the want of a better word, it was designed to be a brutal tournament. So lesser players, it was a one-off tournament to see how it would go. But the lesser players, if you like, and that's no disrespect to the lesser players, but they give themselves more of a, you know, in the head, the more of a chance to do well. I mean, I'll give you an example. I played in my section, there was Kirsty Grattan. It's Mike Grattan's wife, and she was number six. So when we started, I was two down already, but then the very first frame, she was one ball away from knocking me out 3-0. I turned it round, which it's just one of those things, you know. And I think there was a couple of players who made it through to the post-section play, you know. But at the end, the people, the number sixes in the sections, they all sort of fizzled out in the end. But everybody had a chance. That's the way they were made to feel. And it was successful, and it was a good tournament, yeah. I think, I hope that makes sense, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's good to hear it, I guess. Any initiative that hopefully can increase player participation has got to be a good thing. So be interesting to see if we see more of those tournaments moving forwards. I guess we should probably also just give a quick mention to the Spike Angrove Memorial, which also took place over the weekend. It's a pairs tournament in Palmerston North with two previous guests of the podcast. It was Adam Lillian and Brett DeFaria who took that out, and they actually retained the title that they won last year, which is very impressive to ever go back to back in any of these titles with the you know, the sheer depth of quality and the sheer depth in numbers as well. So well done to Adam and to Brett. So Neil, let's find out a little bit more about yourself. So where did it all begin? How did you first become involved in Q Sports?
I was always interested, obviously, when I was like from 10 years old. My dad used to go out playing snooker, and I was always interested in, you know, whether he'd won or not. And I, you know, I was able to watch Pot Black now and again before I went to bed. And then when I was 12 years old, mum and dad had a friend who worked at the Vulcan Foundry, which is very famous for making steam engines. And he was also a friend of my granddad's. And he made me a 5 foot by 2.5 foot snooker table, just a, not slate. It was just a table with a couple of casters on the bottom to level it up. From the age of 12 to 15, it sat on the dining table 7 days a week. And Nan and Grandad had come down for Sunday tea, so the table had to be taken down. we'd lift the table up, put all the plates on, and as soon as tea was finished, I wanted the table back up there. And that went on from the age of 12 to 15, 7 days a week, more or less. And after that, when I was 15, I was able to get myself a junior membership at Vulcan Sports Club, where they had two full-size snooker tables, and my dad got me in there. And that's sort of where it all started.
And so when did you first start tasting some success and realise that this was something you're actually pretty good at?
I was allowed in the Earlstown and the Warrington snooker leagues. And it was like on a handicap basis. And as well as playing one night a week in each league, there was individual competitions. And I won the junior merit, I think, at the age of 16, 17, and the individual handicap at the age of 17. It wasn't just the Earlstown League and the Warrington League were fantastic, but I used to play in two or three other leagues as well. And it's where you've got to think about the people who were helping you and running you around in cars, you know, and you were playing in Liverpool and Manchester knockouts as well. And it was fantastic, you know, and success didn't come all at once. We had to work at it. You know, there was a few of us around there, and we had to work at, you know, trying to get as much practice as we could. And after we finished work, go for a couple of hours on the table. And it all started from there, yeah.
And so what was your high break playing snooker?
Goodness, actually, it's a good question. That I never made my first tum break. My first tum break was 133, and my dad and my granddad were there to watch it. And my second one was 131. And I was 22 years old, I think, when I made my first tum break.
So I guess growing up playing snooker in the 80s and 90s, which is obviously, you know, a golden era, For snooker in the UK, you must have encountered a few of the greats during your time.
Without a doubt, I used to play. There was a guy there, and it wasn't too long ago when I contacted him on Facebook. His name was Simon Morris, and he only lived a couple of miles away. And he introduced me to the stuff down in London. Now we were about 4 hours from London in the car, but when we got down there, We used to play at a place called Woodend Snooker Club, where Peter Ebden used to play all the pro-ams, and Brian Morgan. Now, you may not know, some of these guys you may not know, but Brian Morgan in the 80s, if you Google it, you'll see him in there in the top 64 in the world. But also nearer to home, it was the same, because I grew up with, well, in Merseyside, John Parrott and Rod Lawler. Now, Rod Lawler, you'll still see him in the top 128 in the world, but he's never, ever had the success that John Parrott had. So that sort of goes to show the level of ability and what people have to do to get to the top of the game. So in Manchester, there was Peter Lines, Graham Lambert, somebody, people won't know some of these names, but there was a lot of good players, and some of them are still playing, you know, and they've just sort of scraped a living out of the game. So, but yeah, John Parrott and Peter Ebden were the main ones who I've sort of lined up against.
Did you ever try and make it as a pro yourself?
Mum and Dad, when I was 19, offered me the chance. My dad was a painter and decorator all his life. My mum was a nurse and a secretary. But if I put hand on heart, and I think Simon Singleton would tell you the same, there's a lot of good players out there. Even in 1985, there was players out there 10, 11 years old who were knocking tum breaks in. And, you know, they were just, for the want of a better phrase, they were different gravy. So I said to mum and dad, I said, I honestly don't think I've got it. I said, I'll carry on enjoying, you know, working as an apprentice, as a Miller Turner, and I'll go and play snooker when I finish work. And I said, well, fair enough. So it was a hard decision, but, like, you know, I was sponsored when I came out of my time at 21. I was sponsored by a dentist, funnily enough. And I actually proved the point. He sponsored me for about 6 months, and I was traveling to London, Scotland, playing in a few pro-ams, and I got absolutely nowhere. Honestly, I got absolutely nowhere. And that was when it sort of hit home, you know. So just carry on and enjoy what you've got.
And having played and, I guess, watched up close the likes of, you know, John Parrott and Peter Ebden, seeing these players, you know, professionals, played at the Crucible for many, many years. What exactly do you think it is that separates those guys from, you know, other players who can knock in centuries but will, you know, are still nowhere near good enough to become a pro?
Brilliant, brilliant question. You can get players who can knock tum breaks in for breakfast, dinner and tea, but put them under the spotlight and you put them on the star tables, and it's a different game again. You know, you've got to, it's like anything else. You've got to be a special talent. It's the same with tennis. It's the same with soccer. You know, you've got to have this special talent, and that's like, and there's no jealousy here. I take my hat off to anybody who goes and does it. You know, it's wonderful, but it's still nice to be part of it and take part, you know. And if you get beat, you get beat. There's always another game to play, you know. it's different gravy.
Were you even bothering with pool at this stage, or was that just a silly pub game for you?
Didn't play pool until I came to New Zealand. Sort of, there's a little white lie there. Every now and again, I wasn't one for going out as a youngster. I wasn't going out, you know, to the pubs and things like that. I might have the, in fact, I do remember, my dad took me to watch Fred Davis and Patsy Fagan at the Crucible, and there was a pool table in the foyer, and I actually had a game of pool, I think, at 10 years old. But apart from that, I never really played pool in the UK, never, until I came to New Zealand. When I moved to New Zealand in 2007, it was the year that Mark Selby got beat with John Higgins in the world final. When I moved out here, obviously I was concentrating on trying to find work, and I had no real intentions of playing. And it was through a couple of friends from work who got me interested in playing pool. But that was only in 2009.
And so during your time in the UK, you were also involved in some coaching, and you ran a junior academy as well. Is that right, Neil?
Yep. 2006. I used to go and watch the two shot rule, if you like, at the 147 snooker club, funnily enough. And that's where Mark Selby was practicing. And Sean Murphy used to come down as well and have the practice session with Mark Selby. And Mark's manager at the time, Mukesh Palmer, he actually approached me and he said, you've got your coaching certificate, eh? So I said, yes, I've got the EASB coaching certificate. He said, would you be interested in running a junior academy with me? So I said, yeah, no worries. So we did a couple of weekends at the 147 snooker club in Leicester in the UK there. So that was quite interesting. because there are some good juniors that have come from Leicester around that way. Tamworth, like your Dave Gilberts, your Mark Selby's, your Tom Fords, your Eddie Mannings. So there's been, you know, it's quite a successful area.
Yeah, absolutely. And both Mark Selby and Tom Ford, I believe, they actually made their name playing eight ball first, and then they transitioned across to snooker, didn't they?
They played for Leicestershire. There was Tom Ford, Mark Selby, and there was another snooker player called Gavin Lomax. Now, Gavin's more popular for the two-shot rule, but I did a bit of coaching with Gavin. But Gavin's had over 30 147s on a snooker table, and he couldn't make it as a pro. So wow. Just again, but when it comes to the two-shot rule, you know, he's up there with the McHills, and, you know, I think Mark Selby won the World Championship in 2006 against Darren Appleton, you know, and Tom Ford, absolute whiz kid on the pool table, you know. It's a wonderful talent to have, you know, to play both games.
And so what brought you to New Zealand?
2003, I came over for my holidays. There was a friend of mine who was living in Dunedin. He was from Leicester as well. So he said, why don't you come over? So I came over in 2003, 4, 5 and 7. And in 2007, when I got back to the UK, I basically went to the estate agents. I said, I'd like to put my house up for rent. He said, right, okay. So I got back from New Zealand in March 2007, and then in August I got a single ticket back, started my journey from there, really.
And how long did it take you to discover Q Sports in New Zealand, and what did you start playing when you first came over?
Started playing World Rules at a place called the Wharf Hotel, and then it was, I think it was in 2014, I played, or 2013, and I actually played in a second division individuals final. And I got 3 8 balls in the final, which basically opened the floodgates because your name gets around. And then it was probably a couple of months later, I used to play for the Harbour View in Ravensbourne. And there was a team that came to visit. I think it was the St Kilda Tavern. And there was a couple of guys there, and one of them was Danny Ryan, who introduced himself. And he said, oh, you're a snooker player. So I said, yeah. And he said, how would you fancy a practice? I said, well, I need a cue. Who he put me in touch with, a guy called Alan Gill, who bought a cue off, and basically it went from there. And that's as simple as it is.
And so between 2007 when you moved over, and 2013, were you just not playing Q Sports seriously at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. I was playing in the pool league. As it happened, in 2013 or 14, I think was the first year that it was Adam Marlowe who actually mentioned to my pool captain from the Harbour View, Cheryl Langveld, and he said, tell your man to get his name into this Super League. And that's how the Super League all kicked off for me as well. So it's funny how it all works, but that's how it works.
Tell us about some of your successes in New Zealand, not just within pool, but also in snooker as well.
My first victory was 2014. It was a South Island snooker, and I followed that up in the same year with a Southland victory against Shannon Swain. He's a favourite of mine. And a couple of years later, I've only got one national title, which is great, and that was with Jason Todd in the pairs, the snooker pairs. We won the South Island pairs and the national pairs in one season. In the UK, was probably in 1984-85, the UK Coral Snooker Federation, they had snooker centres all over the UK, and there was one in Earlstown where I lived, and they had a nationwide tournament where the winners of each snooker centre went to Manchester and played the national post section, if you like, and they ended up winning the UK Coral tournament. That was when I was 20 years old. But going back, yeah, I've won a couple of pool titles, South Islands, Otago, but I've never really won a big one, you know, like national title, which I'd love to do, you know, so Hats off to Simon and Baden and Steve Denton, what Kerry Wirtz, wonderful.
I mean, you've gone deep a couple of times in the two shot Super League, which I think we can all agree determines, you know, who is the best eight ball player in New Zealand in that particular year. So you had a semi final, you lost to Baden in the year he won it in 2016, was that right?
Yeah. Oh, that was I can remember. I think I was 8-6 up. And I remember I've cut a red into the, if you look, I've cut a red into the yellow pocket and I've gone off 1, 2, 3 rails. The black's there for the taking and the white ball's gone enough in the middle pocket. So he's gone 8-7, 8-all, 9-8. And I played really well that year, really, really well, you know. But again, Simon's had a few finals before he actually won his first one. You know, and then we got the taste of it and off he went, you know. But again, you know, you look at Simon, Baden, Kerry Wirtz, Steve Denton. I've had some great tussles. Phil Wilkinson, wonderful, wonderful chap. Matt McInnes, I've never played Matt, but just watching him play, it's just, again, it's a different gravy. It's, you know, everybody's got their own trait. You know how they play, and it's good to watch.
And did you get you got deep? Perhaps was it in the first Super League against the eventual winner Adam Marlow? Was that right?
Yeah, I was. Oh dear me, it's like fur balls. Yeah, I was 6-4 up, and I've missed a black over the hole, and he's come back and he's beat me. I think he's either 9-6 or 11-9. But you know what could have been. And I remember Simon Singleton actually saying to me, you know, that was the best pool he'd ever seen. And I think that year Simon was just starting, well, not starting out, but I remember him, I think Des Wilcox beat Simon that year. But yeah, I played well, but it wasn't good enough on the day, you know. And Adam Marlow was he was a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I've talked about his record in previous podcasts. I'm someone who's fascinated by records and winning streaks and, you know, looking at when a particular player's just absolutely dominated. And, you know, Adam Marlow's purple patch between 2010 and 2015, when he won 4 Clubs New Zealand South Island singles titles in 5 years, it's just ridiculous. And I don't think the only other achievement I think that comes close to that, it's probably better actually, is when Phil Wilkinson did the double-double in 2014 and 2015 at the CNZ Nationals. But Adam's record is just phenomenal. It's a shame he had to head back to the UK, because it would have been amazing to see what else he could have achieved. Would you say, is Adam the best pool player you've played in New Zealand?
Yes. I've got to be careful what I say here, because like you play Simon, and these are the guys who have played. I've played Simon. I've beaten Simon a couple of times, but his record is phenomenal. You've got to put Adam and Simon on the same podium, I think. But then you look at Phil Wilkinson, you look at Steve Denton, and yeah, it's on the day. But yes, their records are fantastic. You know what they've done; they've deserved. But it's a difficult one to say who's the best. It's a difficult one, and I'm not going to commit myself. Who would I want to play? I don't care who I play. I would love to play Adam again. I always enjoy playing Simon, Phil Wilkinson. Yeah, Steve Denton. I've only ever played Steve Denton the once. And wonderful people to play against, and you know you're up against it, you know. So, and the younger players as well, you know. I've played Adam Lilly; he's a force. Des Wilcox, I think I've played him in Hamilton at a snooker tournament. Good lads, and a lot to give.
And you're also involved with the coaching of juniors at snooker in New Zealand.
Yep. Dave Judd. He's the secretary of the NZBSA, Dan O'Sullivan. We had a chat, and it was a few years ago now, 2016. I've been away to China with the juniors in 2017 and 18. We've done a few coaching academies, the North Island, the South Island. And I've been away with the seniors to Qatar to manage and coach those guys when they're out there. And we've got one this week, funnily enough, were flying up to Wellington to do 2 days coaching Thursday, Friday at the RSA in Otaki, and followed by the under 21 championships on the Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, something to look forward to. There is a downside to this, Alex, is that we're sort of lacking on numbers, but you know, we're hoping to bump it up, but it's really frustrating a little bit, you know.
In terms of numbers and participation, when I spoke in a previous episode with Katie Singh, who obviously won the New Zealand Open last year, so you know, arguably the top snooker player in New Zealand at the moment, I asked him about why do we think snooker struggles a bit in New Zealand in terms of participation and actually attracting players, especially younger players. And you know, he made a couple of interesting observations. Firstly, that the actual quality of tables isn't particularly good compared to elsewhere in the world, perhaps India and the UK. But also that New Zealanders don't really have like a snooker hero or snooker idol to look up to, someone who's currently in, you know, the top 16 or top 32. You know, going back 20, 25 years, they had Dean O'Kane, who was playing at the highest level. But obviously New Zealand doesn't have a top professional snooker player anymore. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? Why do you think snooker in New Zealand struggles to attract youngsters and struggles to attract new players?
KD, I was with KD just over a month ago. We did a coaching weekend with Paul van der Straaten and KD and a couple of guys up there. And, you know, KD is a wonderful, wonderful player, and he wants to get to the top. And he was asking me what he needs to do. When you get the chance to enter the Nationals, you've won the New Zealand Open, you need to win the Nationals. When you get the chance to play in the Nationals, then you've got to go on further. Dean O'Kane, wonderful. You know, it happened many years ago. We need younger players to come through and have the ability to take it one further. And I've got to say, the NZBSA are doing all they can to give the youngsters a chance. You know, we haven't got the tables. We haven't got star tables. We've got a guy, well, I think you know Dale Kwok. He lives in Dunedin. And he's had ideas of buying some good tables and trying to find somewhere in Dunedin to put them, you know, to get some good tables. But it's actually finding somewhere to put them, you know, and try and move forward. So it's difficult. It's difficult. We've got, as far as players, we've got Riley James, we've got Denning Bunn, Blaine Watson, Shaden McKenzie, who are all trying the hardest, you know, to improve. But you've got to have that certain talent, you know. There are guys, and again, I've got to bring Simon Singleton into this. When we were in the UK years ago, you know, there's 11, 12, 13-year-olds who are, you know, they're knocking tongue breaks in, they're practicing. When they finish school, they're on the table for 4 or 5 hours. And at weekends, you've got to scrape them off the table to get them home for tea. And basically that's what it comes down to.
Is it possible with the current setup and the current infrastructure that New Zealand could produce a world-class player? I guess realistically they'd probably have to move to the UK at a young age and just start playing in a snooker academy over there, do you think?
Well, we were, Adam Lilley, a couple of years ago, he got to the last 32 in the world in Jinan, and he was wonderful, but he got beat in the last 32, 4-0, and it was one of those things. He played well, but he wasn't good enough on the day. There were a couple of Chinese guys there who were touting to take people back to the UK. Lewis Chand had a chat with me about it because he was there as well. You know, what do you think I should do? And I said, well, do you want to lift that trophy up at the Crucible? And he said, yeah. I said, right, let's go and have a chat with this Chinese guy. And this guy wanted people to go over to his academy. I don't know the full ins and outs, but I know he had two of the top guys over there who were on the tour. And I think Yang Bing Tao we watched him in Beijing. That would be 3 years ago now, possibly 4 years ago. And look where he is now. you know. So it's definitely doable. It's just if you've got the ability to, you know, go that extra step. It's a real difficult one. It really is a real difficult one. There's a difference between, yeah, you can play well on the day, you know, pool tournaments, snooker tournaments, but you need to take it one step further and go that extra mile. And, you know, if you've got the chance, go and travel. But I think you touched on it before that maybe we need to send a couple of these guys over to the UK or even Australia and get them in an academy over there.
Well, that's it. I mean, Australia produced Neil Robertson, who's a world champion. So we're only 3.5 hours away on a plane from Australia. So
He's living in the UK, though. He's living in the UK, you know, and, you know, he's in the right place.
And so, like we said at the outset, you are going to be partaking in the Great Southern Knockout Part 2, which is coming up in just under a couple of months here in Christchurch. So it's great to have you on board, Neil. I believe you required a bit of persuasion from one of the other players to join up. Was that right?
I spoke to Michael Hayes and more or less he said, come on, give it a go. See how you feel. Give it a go. So I said, look, I'll have a chat with Simon. And Simon was pretty good about it. I rang Simon up and I said, look, Michael Hayes has rang me up and he's invited me to play in the Southern Knockout. His first words were, who's pulled out? they were his first words. Who's pulled out? I said, oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, cheers. He said, no. He said, look, he said, the Blackpool rules will suit you. Go, have a go. Go on, have a go. So I had a chat with my partner and Steph, who she's a rock, and, you know, she wants me to play. So I rang Michael back up and I said, look, I've had a big think about this. And he went, yeah. I said, yeah, I'd like to enter. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I said, but I had a chat with Simon and he wants to know who's pulled out. So but that didn't work out. It's all been done in good taste. It's all been done in good taste. So yeah, it's I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
And how are you approaching it in terms of preparation?
Well, funnily enough, the cue that I'm using has just had a wee setback, but today Daryl from OnCue has fixed it and I'll be picking it up from Otaki. Shaden McKenzie's going to take it up for me and I'll pick it up from there. But basically I've had a chat with Mike Bowen and he said you can have as much table time as you want to practice. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to get some practice with a smaller white, actually go out my way and do some serious practicing, which I don't do. And I don't even do it at snooker. So I need to, you know, get out there and put some time in on the table. I'll be fine by the time April comes.
Are you going to have, a sparring partner?
There's a few players I can play against, you know, like some of the Super League players, you know. I need to get to know the rules a bit better once I've got the rules sorted out. And yeah, there are players in Dunedin. I've got Brendan Ning, Ian Muir. There's heaps of players I can have a session with. So, but I do like practicing when I do with the small white. It's one of my favourite things I like to get across to players when we're coaching is you need to understand what the white ball can do. And you teach it what to do, you're three quarters of a way there. You know, you need to understand what the white ball can do.
Yeah, I think one of the other attractions, one of the things that we're really keen to push with the Great Southern Knockout is the long races, but obviously with scrapped section play. So it's completely brutal. You know, how you're going to approach a tournament like that, knowing that a couple of mistakes and, you know, you could be out on the first day. Is it a different mindset to when you're going into a normal New Zealand tournament and you've got a day of section play to warm up?
Well, when we played the two-shot rule at the Kashmir Club a few years ago, we had section play, but it was race to four. So I'm led to believe that these races are the races to 13. So you've got your chances. Your mindset before you play, you know what you've got to do before you get there. You know what the outset is. So you do your homework, you get there, you know you're playing race to 13. There's your task. Get on with it and get it sorted out. And if you don't, then you don't. If you do, then great. No, it's going to be. Yeah. I watched it last year, and it was wonderful, wonderful. Some great pool. So it's going to be, you know, nice to be part of it.
And I'll ask you a question that I've tried to ask a few of the other players. No one ever gives me a straight answer to it. So if you could, who would you most or least like to play in the first round? Obviously, we'll be doing the live draw in a few weeks, but either least or either most player you'd want to play. Can you give me an answer to either of those, Neil?
I know what you mean when you say you've not had a straight answer. I can imagine what Simon said. He's not bothered who he plays. So I'll give you two answers. I'm not bothered who I play. Who would I like to play if I was to make it to the final? I would love to play Simon. But I've only ever played Wellesley the once, and it was a great game. I've played Baden on a couple of occasions. I don't know. Baden's got the better of me on those as well. So, yeah, it's a difficult question. Adam Lilly I've played. He's on a different planet when he's playing well. You know, it's going to be wonderful. It's a hard question to answer, Alex. Real hard question to answer. Yeah.
We're just trying to create a bit of animosity before the event. have you played Glenn Coutts before?
No. I watched him play Simon in Auckland in the quarterfinals, I think it was. But yeah, Coutts is he's again on the day. I've not seen too much of Glenn, but I know he's there or thereabouts, you know. And he's a force to be reckoned with. So, you know, he's going to be up for the challenge, definitely.
Yeah, well, 10 times clubs in New Zealand single title holder and 4 times national singles champion. It's a pretty phenomenal record.
To be honest, I don't know too much about him. I've met him a couple of times, but I didn't know that was his. That they were the stats. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a phenomenal record. Tell us about your nickname, The Gentleman. Where did that come from?
It was given to me in 2014 for the Super League. I didn't choose it. It was chosen for me, and I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I want to watch everybody play. I want to watch everybody play well. I'll give everybody my help. I'll do some coaching. You know, sometimes you get the odd comment saying that you're too nice and la-di-da-di-da, but at the end of the day, you know, I want to watch people play. I want to see them do well. But again, there's people who have got more confidence in me than I have myself. You know, people who like watching you play, like that Spearsy, Glenn Spears, Delvin Chin, Dale Kwok, Ian Muir, that, you know, they give me a lot of confidence and a lot of nice comments. So, and I think Simon said you've not, you know, there's a level being too nice and too brutal. He said I think I'm in the middle. He said you're on the too nice side. He said you've got to back yourself a little bit more, and he may be right. You know, he may be right. So I think that's where the gentleman bit comes from.
A few of the players are going to be bringing their own entourages and groups of supporters with them. You got a support crew you're bringing, Neil?
Yeah. Oh, I've got a massive one, mate. Massive. It's called My Lady, Stephanie. She's coming up. Just my partner. Unless somebody else comes up as well, but I've not really asked anybody. Everybody knows it. But I'll know quite a few people up there anyway. Mike Thorpe, he knows I'm coming up, and he said come and stay with us. So we've got our accommodation up there. So I think there'll be maybe a couple of snooker players come and watch as well. So I just wanted to. I've never done anything like this before. And to be honest, at 55 years old, and I've come all the way to New Zealand, and I've got somebody who wants to take the time to ask me about my past. Don't take this the wrong way. I think it's thank you so much. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. And I appreciate it, you know, and I just hope I can do something at the Great Southern Knockout for everybody, you know, and I do. So listen, mate, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
No worries. Well, just beat Simon in the first round and you'll make everyone happy.
Is this a draw out, is it?
No, look, that's brilliant. Well, look, thank you very much for your time, Neil. Hopefully, for people before the interview who might not have known too much about Neil Wally, hopefully we've provided them with a little bit more insight. But yeah, look, thanks again for your time. And have you got many tournaments coming up before Great Southern Knockout in April?
I've received an email today about the Eco Metals. So that's coming up, I think, in a couple of months. And there's an invitational tournament in Gore in July. And there's an RSA. It's a mental awareness for the RSA soldiers. That's coming up on Anzac weekend. But apart from that, it's just maybe get on the practice table and then look forward to April. Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks again, Neil. All the best. And we'll see you on the live stream in a couple of months.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Cheers.